This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Jeff Palermo producing today as Robin Dow takes a day off. And we're glad to be not only on WRKF, but on WWNO in New Orleans, the two most prominent public radio entities in the great state of Louisiana. Your number, 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Yesterday at the Louisiana legislature, the Louisiana Senate approved a Senate education bill, which is House Bill 81, to allow public schools employees to ignore students' wishes to be addressed by pronouns other than the ones they were assigned at birth. A second House Bill, 466, is modeled after Florida legislation that critics call the Don't Say Gay Law. It would outlaw discussion of gender and sexual identity in school settings. If you'd like to comment, again, 877-217-5757. And our guest for the first half hour is Nora Ahmed. She is the legal director, advisor for the Louisiana ACLU. Good morning, Nora.
Good morning.
Tell us about this legislation, which may end up at the governor's desk. Presumably he would veto it, but we don't know yet. And next year, of course, there will be another governor who might have a different point of view. But is it disconcerting, or is this just par for the course in this region of the country we're living in?
It's extraordinarily disconcerting that we have politicians attacking children, attacking educators, and not actually understanding what it means to grow up in this great country where we espouse freedoms and we want young people to grow up understanding who they are, loving one another, and coming into their own as people. So while these are being mimicked across the South based on laws that we've seen in Florida, that doesn't make it right, and that doesn't make it something that Louisianians should be proud of, nor should it be something that we should allow to happen to our educators and our children.
Our governor has stated that these bills are a solution in search of a problem. How significant is this? Is this just politics, or is this something that is a real issue in public schools?
As a former educator who taught in public schools, mind you, not in Louisiana, these are not issues that educators are being consumed with. Educators love the children in their classrooms, and they want them to be full human beings and learn to express themselves as they need to as they're growing into their own. So this is a problem being imposed on educators and being imposed in classrooms that nobody needed to be involved in to begin with.
Is this something that is a train that's rolling now that's going to be hard to stop? You mentioned the South is fertile ground for this, and perhaps other states as well, but this appears to be out of a playbook of some kind in which conservative politics, largely from the Republican side of the aisle, they have consultants saying they benefit from getting this in the realm of public discussion. How do you view the future of this?
The future is that people have to stand up and they actually have to talk about issues that affect them. We need to make sure that people are being provided with economic support that they need. We need to make sure that people are getting jobs that they need. We need to make sure that people are not being discriminated against. What we are now seeing is a movement towards the embracing of discrimination. It doesn't have to be this way, and we saw this occur in Louisiana when we witnessed the transgender health care ban fail. So there is a way for Louisianians and for politicians to ensure that education remains with educators, that medical care remains with doctors and nurses and people who provide such care, and they need to allow parents and their children to make the decisions that are best for themselves.
You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF and WWNO. Friday Politics, and Nora Ahmed is with us. She is the legal director for the Louisiana ACLU, and she is expressing concern about these bills that passed the Senate Education Panel yesterday, both on a 3-1 vote. Voting yes were Senators Beth Mizell of Franklinton, Mark Abraham of Lake Charles, and Senator Robert Mills of Minden. The committee chair, Senator Cleo Fields of Baton Rouge, opposed advancing both measures. And a listener notes, Nora, that this was done on the first day of Pride Month, which is a national holiday first established in 1999 to honor the 1969 Stonewall Uprising in Manhattan. It would seem that a message was being sent, and perhaps this is a message that the state of Louisiana might not benefit from. How do you view that?
I think it was absolutely an intended message, but it's gross. It's simply improper for us to spew hatred against members of our community that we all love. We need to ensure that we are supporting our children. We need to prevent suicide rates among LGBTQ plus youth. We need to ensure that they have communities where they are cared for. If that can't occur in the home, it needs to happen in schools. It needs to happen in libraries. It needs to happen online. We need to support our children. If Louisiana believes in its children and wants them to prosper, then we need to love them, not hate them. And during Pride Month, just as every single day of the year, we need to tell all our young people, no matter who they are or how they identify, that they are deeply loved. And when we have a legislature that does the opposite of that, that puts young people and their families in fear.
Again, your number, 877-217-5757, toll free wherever you are. And we know we have an expanded audience today because of WWNO carrying Friday politics of Talk Louisiana. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on. Good morning, sir. You're talking with Nora Ahmed.
Good morning, Jim, and thank you. My questions are this. It's about how drastic the surgery can be to change someone's sex from one to the other, and something that basically, why would you not wait until someone's 18 or of age to make the decision to do this rather than take it whatever they're saying they are? It's a very confusing subject, and then that's my question of what is the medical assistance people need? I mean, after these operations.
Well, Phil, you've asked a question that a doctor might be better able to answer, but it's really not part of the legislation being discussed. But it is, I'm sure, one of the reasons why some of these lawmakers are taking aim. And I presume in some cases for good intentions. But Nora, for those who have experienced this, either personally or with a child or a loved one, it's a complex issue in which some people make decisions about without, I think, getting the full story. What are your thoughts about Phil's observation?
People are seeking the doctors who understand what gender-affirming care is. And doctors are often not immediately resorting to surgeries on young people. But there are young people whose lives are at risk because they are not being recognized for who they are. And when doctors make a decision with families about what kind of care that child needs, that is a decision between the doctor, the child, and the family. That is not for those of us on the outside to start contemplating what we might think or how we might have felt in those circumstances. This is about children and families and medical care, and that is not a place for non-experts, for legislators to start weighing in on what they think is or is not appropriate. At the end of the day, if we want to save children's lives, we need to ensure that they have appropriate care. And gender-affirming care is appropriate and necessary health care for a number of youth.
And these two bills are not related to the actual procedure. This is about talking about sexuality and gender identity. That's one bill that would be illegal. The other would allow public school employees to ignore students' wishes to be addressed by pronouns other than the ones they were assigned at birth. So if we can, let's stay on topic. James in Metairie, you're on with Nora Ahmed. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. I'm looking at an article about this one of the bills, HB 466. It bans discussion of sexual orientation in the classroom and during extracurricular activities. Now, here's a hypothetical case. A female teacher starts discussing about her family, her children, and her heterosexual male husband. Wouldn't that heterosexual teacher, since heterosexuality, I believe, is a sexual orientation, would that teacher, heterosexual teacher, be banned and against the law for discussing her heterosexual marriage and children?
Nora, does James make a good point?
I think we have to take a look at what the bill is meant to prohibit and who will be enforcing that bill. So while there might be legal arguments to the effect of whether or not the bill would provide parameters around that type of discussion, the real issue is this bill, both of these bills are intended to prevent people from discussing the realities of their lives. And so to that extent, your point is correct. People need to be able to...
877-217-5757. We'll take a 90-second pause. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Jeff Palermo is producing, and we appreciate the inclusion of the audience at WWNO in New Orleans, as well as the huge audience at WRKF in Baton Rouge. On Fridays, both stations air this program, and we're visiting with Nora Ahmed, the legal advisor for the Louisiana ACLU. We'll spend a moment or two continuing the discussion and move on to other matters, but the Senate Education Committee on Thursday advanced two bills. One would ban discussion of gender and sexual orientation in schools. The other would prohibit teachers from using a student's preferred name or pronoun without their parents' written permission if it differs from their biological sex. 877-217-5757. Rose on government. Rose, you're on in Baton Rouge. Rose, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I want to ask, why are they dealing with people's own personalities? That's people. I'm a lesbian, and I tried to commit suicide several times. Did not succeed. But it's still bad for them to make hate in our schools. So how can we stop them from doing that?
Nora, would you please respond to Rose? Thank you for sharing your story, Rose.
We need to actively be involved in the legislative process. And when these bills are moving through committees, the House and the Senate, people need to be writing in and talking to their legislators and telling them that they do not want to live in a state or a community that espouses hate. We all have to be involved in a process that to many can seem complicated, but that has very real and tangible results.
Rebel in Sherwood. Good morning, Rebel. That's in Sherwood in Baton Rouge. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much. And ma'am, thank you so much for the work you do. Just want to restate, Jim, you mentioned a playbook earlier. And the truth is that it's an age-old playbook, at least 100 years old. It's a fascist playbook. People can go back and study what Mussolini did, what Hitler did, what Putin did more recently in Russia. And you'll find that these minorities in societies are always the first that are targeted by fascist ideology. And then, of course, it gets worse and worse and worse. And we can remember what the Nazis did in just 12 years. But, ma'am, what is the issue that some of these folks are having? I guess the way they make these laws so broad is because they don't want them to be pointed out as discriminatory. So they make the law very broad, but of course it's obvious who they are targeting and what they are targeting.
Nora, would you respond to Rebel?
The laws are broad, and as you noted, they're part of a larger playbook. But what they're really about is preventing education in schools. What we are doing is turning this country into a group of people who actually don't understand opposing viewpoints, do not have a sense of critical analysis, and do not know how to engage with people or ideas that differ from their own. That is antithetical to the ideals that this country was founded upon. So we should be very worried that what our legislatures are doing is dumbing down our curricula and dumbing down our children. That is not what makes the United States of America, the country that so many people want it to be and the ideals upon which it was founded. So we have to get at the core that what is happening in schools is preventing education. And the more we prevent education and we impose a dumbing down of our children, we are going to enter a society where ideals that we thought would never once be espoused in this country start to become the norm. And so if we are afraid of what is happening in Russia and Ukraine, we should also be very afraid of what is happening here, because it is about ensuring that people do not know the truth.
This session that will end in 6 days, if things go according to the Constitution, was designed, as sessions every other year are, to be a fiscal-only session or a fiscal-emphasized session. Instead, we've waded into all these social issues and the culture wars. And one of those, of course, is abortion. And the governor of Louisiana, who is, quote, pro-life, asked for a rape and incest exception from the legislature for abortion. And this is something as stated that's even in place in states like South Carolina, which just passed one of the most prohibitive abortion laws in the country. But Louisiana lawmakers said no. What was your reaction to that decision from the legislature, Nora?
It's no different than my reaction to the Don't Say Gay bill and so many other bills that were discussed this session. We are talking about preventing people from making the appropriate, necessary medical decisions that allow them to be a full person. That we are in a state where we cannot even recognize that we need to have exceptions for some of the most heinous types of experiences and trauma that people go through really means, again, that we have to assess what we are trying to do as a state. If we want people to be full persons and realize their own and contribute to society in the best way possible, then we need to ensure that they have agency over their lives. And what we see in Louisiana is a mechanism that is ensuring that people are not allowed to make any decisions for themselves, be it when they are pregnant, be it when they are facing life-saving trauma, be it when they're in school. And that is something that the entire state needs to think very, very firmly about, and to ensure that we are all educated and we are taking part in the legislative process so that these types of issues actually get the attention that everyone in the state knows that they deserve.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org in our remaining moments with Nora Ahmed, the legal director for the Louisiana ACLU. Gustavo and Goodwood in Baton Rouge. Good morning, sir. You're on the air with Nora.
Good morning. The first decision that a lady can make regarding choice is whether to have unprotected sex.
All right. Well, we were talking about rape and incest, and that would not apply in this case. What's your next question, Gustavo?
That lady scares me. I think she wants to transform this country into Sodom and Gomorrah. Just allowing everybody to do whatever they want.
Well, that's your opinion, but could you ask a question? What is your question? I'd rather get a question rather than your opinion, Gustavo.
The question for you is, when are you going to have somebody as radical and boisterous for
us? All right, I've had people from both sides of the spectrum, and you as a consistent listener know that, Gustavo, and it would have been nice to have a legitimate question from you, but I don't think that's coming today, so we'll continue our discussion with Nora without inclusion from Gustavo Ruiz de Chavez in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757. Nora Ahmed, people like the gentleman we just spoke with, I suspect he's of sincere intention, but emotions are such that I think sometimes people get into personal attacks rather than actually discussing the issues.
We are a country that believes in civil rights and civil liberties. Those are the ideals upon which we were founded, and those are the ideals that people who live here are allowed to argue for and fight for. So from my perspective, what we're actually advocating for is the opposite. It is to allow people to make decisions that actually work for them, and also in consultation with medical providers, with educators, with parents. This is a country of ideals and ideas, and we have to be able to engage in this exchange. And if we prevent these conversations from taking place, then we are turning into a country where we are going to be easily indoctrinated by whatever laws are passed, and we are going to operate in fear.
Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, you're on Talk Louisiana with Nora Ahmed.
Good morning. I just really wanted to second everything she is saying, because the right to free speech, whether I particularly like what you have to say or not, is there in the Constitution. And all these laws are telling us what to think and what to speak or not speak about. I mean, what books to read, what women can do with their bodies, what we can study in school.
We're going to take a short break. We will spend a few more moments with Nora Ahmed if she's so inclined, and I believe she will be, for the people who are online waiting to talk with her. And if you'd like to get under the wire, 877-217-5757, then it's political consultant Mary Patricia Ray on the Senate approval of the debt ceiling deal, two no's from Louisiana senators, and the governor's election. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Mary Patricia Ray is on deck, the noted political consultant who guided Governor John Bel Edwards to victory in the year of 2015, as he was a relatively unknown state lawmaker and ended up winning the governor's race. Now we're 18 weeks away from the finish line of October 14th, the primary, and some are comparing this year to that year. We'll talk about that and more with Mary Patricia, but let's take as many of you, and we've got a full board of calls now for Nora Ahmed. So please be concise, and always appreciate your inclusion in the show. Thank you for calling. Roberta in Covington. Roberta, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Roberta.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to thank Nora for everything that she's doing. I've been a so-called card-carrying member of the ACLU since I was 18. I'm 52. In the last year, I've doubled my monthly donation, because things that are happening are really disturbing and honestly disappointing. I thought, you know, by the time I reached this age, America would be so much further along in progress in terms of equity, equality, understanding each other, and it seems like we've gone back so far. So I guess I'd like to know what you are recommending members like myself can do more than writing to our legislators.
Thank you, Roberta. Nora?
I would say showing up and talking to people and having people support those organizations that are working and fighting on the ground for the values that you believe this country needs to actually effectuate in the legislature.
Nonita in Mandeville. Nonita, you're on with Nora Ahmed. Hi, Nonita.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment. This bill really makes me sad. I'm a teacher. I teach at a university, and we always want our students to feel included and welcomed, and I always ask them, what name do you prefer? And last semester, I had three students that identified, with a different name as their gender, and two of them tried to commit suicide. And so, we know the statistics for suicide when it comes to the LGBT community, and this really concerns me. And I wanted to ask Nora if this is just the beginning. It's in K through 12. Possibly they would it would be for K through 12. Will this possibly continue on to higher education?
Nora,
there are always possibilities, though challenges at the higher education level could start to make their way through the courts. And I believe that we have some situations where that is taking place in other states. But at the end of the day, what we want to do is ensure that it's not happening in K through 12 for the very reasons you're talking about. When we teach young children that they are not accepted and who they are at a young age, it's very hard for them to live to the age where they're going to be going to college and being successful human beings. So yes, it's possible, but I believe that we have to keep up the fight and we have to dial back these laws that we've seen passed this session.
Lou in New Orleans. Hello, Lou. You're on the air with Nora.
Hi, Nora. Thank you so much. I'm curious about how this is going to unfold if it does go all the way through. So we're not allowed to apparently call people by their preferred pronouns as far as like nicknames and that sort of stuff, which may not be a pronoun, but lots of people go by different names than that are not their legal names. How are they going to ramify that situation? And also, I just want to state, as someone who used to be a Christian, I left the church because of this hate and rhetoric coming from quote unquote Christians. Jesus calls us to love the least of these and all of us. He doesn't say judge. He doesn't say other.
All right, Nora, would you respond to Lou? Thank you, Lou.
At the end of the day, here's what I'm going to say. Educators and teachers are very smart, and at the end of the day, they want their children and students to be loved. And so I do have faith that we can still make children feel included by ensuring that they are whole for the very reasons you identified. There are many ways when you go to a foreign language class, you're given a new name. There are many ways that teachers can refer to children that I believe can still make them feel whole. And there's also a question about who is actually going to come into these classrooms and start threatening these people.
Right.
We have to understand that teachers are independent, and I do believe they will do what is best for our children so that they will live to see another day.
Final call for Nora Ahmed, legal director for the Louisiana ACLU, Fred in Ascension Parish. Fred, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I've got a question for Nora. Nora, I understand we all have a passion for our freedoms. But do you, as a woman, want the freedom from your monthly period?
All right, come on. Let's not get there. And I'm ashamed of some of the callers this morning. But, Nora, it would be nice if we could have a civil conversation about these issues, but it seems that often it brings out the worst in people.
I think we just have to keep talking about it. I don't actually believe that it necessarily brings out the worst in people. It just means that we have to keep having conversations, and ideally over time, people will become more open to opposing points of view. And what our legislators are doing, the most damaging thing that they're doing is they're basically saying that we should not listen to others who have a different opinion than our own.
It is interesting that the two inflammatory callers we've had in the last several minutes are both men, and there are significantly more men than women in the state legislature and in the National Congress. If we had more women, would it be a possible better discussion of issues that, particularly abortion, involve women, in my view, more than they do men?
I think that's why diversity matters. We need to start seeing more diverse people in all walks of life, including in the legislature. And if we actually had a legislature that was representative of the population in terms of race, gender identity, gender, all of the myriad ways in which we differ, we would likely have a state where so many more people felt loved and included.
Thank you, Nora Ahmed. Always good to visit with you. Appreciate your insights. Thanks for going into overtime.
Thanks so much, Jim.
And again, you're listening to Talk Louisiana, not only on WWNO, but also as we are Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 in the morning and 9 to 10 in the evening on WRKF in Baton Rouge. And we are turning the page and moving on to a few other topics with Mary Patricia Ray, the noted political consultant, who is also a law professor, and she can speak on legal matters too, but she's primarily here to discuss the political world. And let's start with the debt ceiling in Washington. The Senate has approved, the deal that was ironed out by the White House and the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, Republican, and his trusty aides, Garrett Graves of Louisiana and Steve Scalise of Louisiana. But the vote in the Senate, Mary Patricia, was 63-36, and both Kennedy and Cassidy voted no. It is interesting that they voted at odds with most members of our delegation in the House. What do you think?
Well, I think the Senate had some. First of all, thanks for having me this morning, Jim. Sorry, I'm kind of excited about this stuff. Can you tell? I hopped right in. I think the Senate has had some different concerns than the House did, and the way to build a coalition in the Senate was mostly for the leadership to focus on military and Pentagon spending. that was their fastest way to get the votes they needed. So that's what they concentrated on. And that wasn't what our senators took issue with in the bill. So their stated problems weren't addressed, and they continue to vote no.
The vote in the Senate was 63-36 with one abstention, and the abstention was a senator from Tennessee, Hagerty, but the 99 members who voted in the Southeastern Conference, only five of the 22 senators voted yes. Only five, and when I say the Southeastern Conference, I'm talking about the 11 states, and in two national elections, Donald Trump is 21-1 in the Southeastern Conference. And of the five who voted yay for the debt ceiling bill, two of them are Democrats. The two that were elected in Georgia by close margins, Warnock and Ossoff. And there were only three Republicans in the entire Southeastern Conference to vote yes. And they were John Boozman of Arkansas, yes. John Cornyn of Texas, yes. And Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, yes. But all the others voted no, which shows that our country in many ways is divided by region. And the Southeastern Conference, with its 11 states, soon to be 12 with Oklahoma, has more than half the electoral votes needed to win an election. So we are a place in the country that is Trump country, that is solidly conservative, and is a major player in political circles that cannot be discounted. But it seems that many of these social issues, it's going to be a hard sell, Mary Patricia. And in this case, it wasn't a social issue. It was a fiscal issue.
Yeah, I think, Jim, that it's easier for especially members of the Senate in this region to simply vote a hardline conservative viewpoint than to really do the work that they would need to do to explain their vote to voters who don't understand a lot of times what is in their best interest. And so, unfortunately, it's probably a lot more politically expedient to do what's not in constituents' interest than it is to try to be the person explaining it to them. And that's a lot of the behavior you see both here at home and in the Beltway.
And Bill Cassidy, a listener, notes it's a bit of a surprise to her that he voted no. But Cassidy, other than matters concerning Donald Trump, Mary Patricia, is a pretty conservative guy. And I think he's now looking ahead to 2026, and he doesn't want to inflame his base any more than they're already inflamed about him.
Jim, I think that's right. And, you know, winning a statewide election in Louisiana is not easy. It's not easy to build a coalition of people that gets you to 52%, 53%, 54%, which is where you want to be on election day, without building a base. And so alienating a conservative base in a statewide election can have dire results if you're being challenged by someone who's farther to the right than you. I think Senator Cassidy is acutely aware of that.
And Garrett Graves is weighing the options in 2026. It could be a battle between two Baton Rougeans for the U.S. Senate in 3 years. We'll talk more with Mary Patricia. Again, your number is 877-217-5757. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. You're listening to Friday Politics on WRKF and WWNO. Mary Patricia Ray is with us for the last quarter hour. And in the final lap, we'll talk about a few matters. The governor's election's 18 weeks from tomorrow. And Carol in Jefferson. Carol, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Yes, I want to know your guest's opinion on the debt ceiling deal in the upcoming election in 2024. Seems like some things didn't move a lot from day to day, but like Manchin got his pipeline.
All right. What about the repercussions for the vote next year? I suspect that next year this will be an issue that's way down the list of concerns, but it was a major concern. We didn't want the government to run out of money. And it was, Mary Patricia, a bipartisan vote in the U.S. House, 314, Democrats and Republicans voting for it, and Democrats and Republicans voting against it, and that is a rarity. As we know, in most cases in the Senate and in the House, the votes are right down party lines. But will there be any political pushback or perhaps reward come 2024?
Well, you know, Jim, in these budget situations, there's winners and there's losers. But as a political consultant, I think the more specifics that you can get on your side, and I'll give you an example of what I mean, the better positioned you are to argue not only that you won, but that the decisions of your opponent were dangerous and bad. And so I think in this case, in 2024, the win goes to moderate and left-leaning candidates, so mostly to Democrats. And that's because Republicans can say they held out and kept the debt ceiling bump as low as possible and helped stop government growth and, you know, that kind of talking point. Democrats are going to be able to say that Republicans voted to undo important policies that were very popular coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, measures that were meant to stop inflation that are being rolled back as part of this deal. So they're going to have a lot more specific talking points to say what their Republican opponents did that was bad for the American people. And I think you'll see them spending a lot of money to do that. Are they going to target it to the right voters and get their message where they need to go, bet on the right races? You know, in the next midterm, will it help Joe Biden in the places that he needs help? That remains to be seen. But I think they've got the talking points on their side.
877-217-5757. If you'd like to get in under the wire with Mary Patricia Ray, who directed John Bel Edwards to the mansion 8 years ago. And now we have an election that has some similarity, but there are some distinctions. And right now, with 18 weeks to go, the field was thought to be set. Let's start on the Democratic side. Jason Williams of New Orleans is apparently testing the waters. Do you think this is serious? And if it is, how much of a factor would this be for other campaigns, particularly that of Sean Wilson?
You know, I'm very blessed, I think, in this governor's race to have such a good relationship with so many people who are running. You know, some of them, I think, would make better governors than others. Sean Wilson and Jason are both those people with whom, you know, I have the great pleasure of talking politics and policy and being a family friend. And, you know, I think the Democrats are going to work this out amongst themselves and that everybody wants their pulpit. You know, everybody wants their time to speak their mind. And everybody is thinking about what they can do to best serve the people of Louisiana. I know probably some of your listeners are skeptical of that. And so I personally think the conversation's a good one to have and that the Democrats are ultimately going to unite behind a single candidate. I think that it's very likely that that candidate's going to remain Sean Wilson as the currently the Democratic frontrunner.
In 2015, John Bel Edwards received 40% of the votes in the primary. It would seem unlikely that any Democrat would get that this go around. But there is a base of Democratic support in having the field cleared, not just endorsements, but just being the only D in the race has great advantage. Now, Jason Williams, just by getting in the race, or any other Democrat, would take votes off Sean Wilson. Would that perhaps cause two Republicans to be in the runoff for governor for the first time? Is that a possibility or is that beyond the prospect of reality, Mary?
Well, I think part of the reason the conversation about D.A. Williams is a healthy one for Democrats to have is that they need to think about what you're talking about, Jim. They need to think about the ways that their own behaviors will cut into their ability to make a runoff, to continue to build a bench. And the other reason I think it's great is because Jason Williams is exactly the kind of person with exactly the kind of integrity who knows that and would never, I don't think, do anything to damage a Democrat's chances of winning this election. And so he's not the kind of person who's going to be talked in as a stunt, right, by Republicans. We know that especially some of those folks that are sort of turning into also Rands, they're looking for especially an African-American Democrat to be the spoiler in this race so that they can pass up the Democrat and make a runoff with the Republicans front runner, Jeff Landry. But I think, you know, people are pretty sophisticated. They see through that stuff. And that's exactly the opposite of who Jason Williams is. So I don't think that's what we're seeing here. And I don't think they're going to be successful in pulling that kind of stunt in 2024.
On the Republican side, this group Reboot Louisiana, which is tied to Stephen Wagespack, ran an anti-Jeff Landry spot on crime. And it drew an immediate denunciation from the House Majority Leader in the Congress and former state lawmaker, Steve Scalise. The Republicans attacked each other in 2015 and it didn't work. They attacked each other in 2019 and it didn't work. Are we going to see another case in which Republicans who are trailing Jeff Landry try to take him down?
Well, look, everybody's going to attack Jeff Landry. That's the name of the game. If you want to be in a runoff with Jeff Landry, you want people to perceive that this is a race between you and Jeff Landry. And so I'm not surprised to see Reboot running these ads, though I do think it was an interesting choice to choose crime as the line of attack. It is the issue that's on voters' minds in every poll that I'm seeing, and I see multiple sources of polling in this race every month. And it's completely clear to me why people are going to go down that road, I think. Starting with no name recognition or not a lot of it means that any dollar spent on attacking someone else is a dollar you can't spend on raising your own profile. So Republicans are going to have hard choices about how to spend the limited resources they do have, whether to attack or whether to raise their own name recognition. And Jim, that second choice, I say this every time I'm on the show lately, pay attention to who is the second choice, especially among conservative voters. They need a permission system to vote for whoever they're going to choose in a runoff if it's not Jeff Landry. So we're going to want to watch those numbers closely, especially over the next 6 months. Right after qualifying, I'm going to be really interested to see where those numbers go.
There are five Republicans in the race now, and Landry, Wagisback, Richard Nelson, Sharon Hewitt, and John Schroeder. Do you think all five will stay in the race?
Well, I know all of them personally, and they are not they are people of independent-minded decision-making. You know, I mean, these aren't people who are going to be swayed by a deal or a job or backing for another office or those kinds of political deals, and I think that's evident because they're all still in the race. And I would not be surprised to see someone do the math and understand it is wise to drop out, probably. But I'll tell you, Jim, I'm one of the few, I would not be surprised if they all show up to qualify before the end of qualifying on August 10th.
And of course, they could always get out of the race, but by virtue of qualifying, you're blocked from running for other positions. And some of these people could pull back and run for, let's say, attorney general. And we lost a candidate in that race yesterday in John Belton, the independent from Union Parish, who withdrew. And that's one of a few races, but that's obviously a plum job. It's where Jeff Landry is right now. And how do you view that one right now with three candidates in the field?
Well, it's going to be a battle to make people care. I think the candidate who messages the best on crime and consumer issues is going to be the one that wins that race, regardless of party. And if it goes to a Republican on Republican runoff, there's going to be some hard choices for Republicans in that race. A lot of distinctions. And look, in a statewide election, sometimes I'm brought in to sort of be like the white woman whisperer in these campaigns to understand how to message to specific demographics like white women. What do we need to message to them? I think in that attorney general's race, that is a huge advantage for Liz Merle, because she's going to have the ability to message to women in a way that other people can't. But you have to be careful doing that, because women voters are sophisticated and informed. And so they will pay attention to what the message is and not be swayed by the fact that just because you're a woman, you're the better candidate. So I think that's going to be the battle. And I think, frankly, Liz comes to it with more advantages, mainly that she doesn't have a voting record for people to critique. That can weigh you down and bog you down.
We do have John Stefanski in the race and Marty Maley, and there may be others, but we only have about 30 seconds. But as I picked up the Advocate today, above the fold, John Ilerio, Trina Edwards tie the knot, front page of the Metro section. The Advocate has informed people that their most read stories last year were about Trina Edwards. Why is there this fascination with this lady who's now married one of the great politicos in Louisiana history, John Ilerio, and the four-time governor? What do you make of this?
Women who don't conform to society's expectations for them are always panned and applauded. I'm on the side of applauding, and I'm very excited for the president and Trina, and I wish them all the best and congratulations.
Thank you, Mary Patricia. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for our program. Until next time, for Jeff Palermo, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay safe and stay tuned.